Hello, everyone. This is Ryan with Product Hunt Radio. I'm here with Sacha and Hunter from Homebrew. What's up, guys?
What's going on?
Hey. So, what do you guys want to talk about? What products are you digging?
Well, I've heard that you've talked about all the useful hot social products as of late. So we're gonna take another direction.
Uh-oh.
We're gonna talk about something hopefully a little bit more useful in Nuzzle, one of our favorite investments of late.
Yeah. So they just raised. You just invested in their second seed round, right?
Yeah. Jonathan Abrams, the founder, is somebody we've known for a while. And when he was doing the first seed round, Homebrew didn't exist yet. It was just a glimmer in our eyes. when the opportunity came about to put our money where our behind our usage, I guess we're both big fans of the service he was building before. We jumped at the opportunity.
So I'm pulling up, I've been using Nuzzle for several weeks, if not months, and I use the email list. I mean, it's like an email-based product primarily, and then they recently released the iOS app as well.
See, the secret is we'd been using the iOS product for a while, so we knew.
You see that?
But the email itself is fantastic. I mean, that's what came first, and it's one of those emails that you open every day.
I like the app. Yeah. Like, the app was the one that really caught me, because I tend to, before... in order to sort of find interesting content, I would constantly leap in and out of my social streams looking for like the link that seemed interesting to either read in the moment or save to pocket. And for me, the app and the ability to sort of set the cadence of refresh, do I want things from the last 2 hours, last 4 hours, last 8 hours? Do I want things that have been shared by two people, by five people, so on and so forth? Gives me like the one-stop shop. No matter if I've been in meetings the last few hours, it's the first thing I open because it's going to show me what matters.
He's a control freak. I liked the cadence that the email provided, which was once a day you get everything that was shared among and most popular amongst your network on the prior day, right? And now the app does another wonderful thing, I think, which is the real-time notifications around what's being shared. And they've done a really nice job with notifications, I think, and made them really super useful.
Yeah, I've been getting the notifications again. I've been getting the emails, and I like the email because it's simple and it's the quality of the content is always good because they don't try and do anything fancy. They don't do any like sophisticated algorithms. It's really what is the article or link that everyone in your network, people that you follow on Twitter, what is most shared? And well, so, for me, that's useful.
Yeah, I mean, right now, it uses Twitter and Facebook as signals. I think Jonathan's got plans to use some other signals. But Sacha, let me ask you this: since you ran product at Twitter before we started Homebrew, why doesn't Twitter do this? Why
someone
this
was just asking
that,
that
Twitter does?
It's a very good question. I think that when I was at Twitter, we had taken step one towards turning Twitter into a more consumption-oriented experience, and there was always an idea that we wanted that consumption-oriented experience to be not just for users, but also for non-users. And I think Nuzzle has developed something really powerful for Twitter and Facebook users. And I'd love to see them build Nuzzle into something that can also be used by non-users, because all the signal is there, right? So Jonathan's paying attention to the things that I'm telling him, which hopefully is having some insight into Twitter.
Oh, Jesus, that's a value add investor.
Well, as a customer,
wait, do
that's
I get
what
some
I want.
some cut on this too? Because it's going through this podcast. Yeah. I like the simplicity of it. Is what I love about it. And I've seen so many products. We've talked about this with Product Hunt maybe like 4 months ago, Hunter, where you can imagine Product Hunt being very complicated and using a lot of technology to surface products. But at the end of the day, it's sort of like the community and the people around it, and just having that weight of all these upvotes and all these faces of people, showing interest in a product. I think is what's most compelling.
And when you don't, there's not. The black box is on the back end. It's not exposed to you. And so it's very easy to understand. Like, I've curated these graphs based on my friends and the people I follow. Each share is essentially a vote.
Yep.
And it shows me the number of votes, the people who did it, and, prioritizes it. Like, I don't have to worry about them having some skewed notion of what my interests are.
Yep.
I've done the work. Across these services, and Nuzzle sort of pulls it together. There was a morning when, for Twitter, Pocket was down, and Twitter was immediately less useful to me. Right. And so, the fact that also from Nuzzle that I can consume directly, or from early on, Jonathan was somewhat agnostic about actually where you consume it, so I could sort of long click to save to Pocket and stuff like that, just made it, pretty indispensable for me. But that's what that's what we're about. We're about indispensable indispensable apps that create revenue or efficiencies. Right?
I mean, Nuzzle's an example of an app that does one thing really well, and it's obvious what that one thing is. And I think we tend to like products that do that, particularly if they're products who do that do one thing really well that's super useful, and not just helping people waste time.
And I think, though, sometimes I the way I describe products in that one thing, if you sort of think of like the level of zoom that like sits on like Google Maps, right? So you can zoom all the way down from like this street address all the way up to San Francisco, to California, to the world. I like to see products and entrepreneurs who have statements around all those levels of zoom, even if the first implementation of the product seems like the zoom is pulled down. So like to make it sort of more crisp, like I think if you pull the Nuzzle all the way down, it's like, oh, what my friends are sharing on Twitter and Facebook. And if you start to zoom up one level, it's like, oh, what content should I pay attention to, you know, right now? And then you can keep moving up to think about what does it mean for the types of things that interest you, whether they be content, commerce, so on and so forth, that are being talked about by your friends and influencers across a number of different services. But either because those services, you know, everything's temporal, you know, so like you've lost it somewhere in your Twitter feed, or because of, you know, Facebook, you know, they are selecting what to show you. So who knows if the most interesting thing is or is not in front of me at any given time.
And you like control. So
Well, and all these different services also have their own cadence, right? So I never check my LinkedIn news feed to like go and read things off of that.
Yeah.
If I'm on LinkedIn, I'm doing people search. But does that mean that there's no signal that can be culled from my LinkedIn newsfeed and sort of brought into something like this? No, of course not. That's data, but it's data that I want a product like Nuzzle to make sense of, rather than me having to figure it out, you know, at each of these different platforms.
Yeah, I think the zooming point's an important one. I think a lot of startups, a lot of startups jump to tomorrow, and we like to see a gap between today and tomorrow, right? And today is super important, being focused on doing one thing really well. And then the entrepreneur has in their mind the vision for what tomorrow looks like and how to potentially get there. But where I think startups make a lot of mistakes is being focused on tomorrow, today.
Yeah.
And we like there to be a gap there.
You know, I've seen that happen as well with some entrepreneurs where they're very clever, they're very visionary, but they're almost too visionary for their own good. And you're right, they don't tackle the current day problems and they try and think too far ahead.
Yeah, I don't know who said it, but one of my favorites, and we repeat it, I think, a lot to our startups is, you know, no startups ever died from a lack of ambition, only lack of focus.
Yeah.
And I think that's more true now than ever before.
Yeah. So what other kind of ways do you curate news, or what other Nuzzle-like products do you use? Anything else? I mean, right now I'm so inundated with so much right now, just on Twitter alone, that, you know, Nuzzle helps, but it's not like I need more news or blogs.
I hate to pimp another one of our investments, but I will.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. There's a reason why you invested, right?
Those were all the first ones that I posted or voted up on Product Hunt. Ryan called me out on.
So another investment we have
quick side note. I noticed that Dave Marin upvoted Talk To like 2 or 3 days ago before their announcement of their acquisition, which I thought was funny.
Has he upvoted Britain Co? That's the question.
Britain Co?
Britain
Co? Oh, I don't know if he has actually. Yeah, hopefully.
So can you create a
for his own good.
Can you create a service that tracks all the CEOs on Product Hunt
what they upvote? This is not a business intelligence.
I'm actually, so as a fun data experiment, what I've been thinking about is figuring out a way to categorize all the VCs, and of course we can do that just through like Odesk or something, and see what they're clicking on and just see what the behavior is in VCs versus founders versus, let's say, designers, and just see, you know, if there's a significant difference.
Data porn. Everybody loves data porn.
In terms of profanity and comments.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That'll be one of the metrics. And how that relates to
the most in Product Hunt comments.
Dave McClure.
Yeah. You know, he's not been commenting enough. Hey Dave, if you're listening, any more F-bombs on Product Hunt?
I think we're going to talk about the Skim.
Oh, the Skim. So yes, that's another information service that we're investors in, which we think is incredible. If you're a subscriber to the Skim, you get a email in the morning that editorially summarizes the most important news of the day. And it does it in a particular voice.
With flair.
And it's oriented towards millennial women, but it turns out that 30% of the user base is male. And it's an incredible way to know about what's going on in the world and be reasonably informed so you can carry on an intelligent conversation with anybody you meet in dinner, at dinner or over coffee or whatever it might be, about the world's events. And we couldn't be bigger fans of the product and obviously the team and the opportunity, because since we're investors there. But it's one of those products that's that you mention and people are like, I don't quite get it, and then they subscribe and they check the, you know, they open that email every single day.
The bed and the bathroom are where, like, a lot of their right. newsletters are consumed.
And before 10 a.m.
Did you mention that it's www.theskim2m.com?
I did not, but thank you for mentioning that.
Okay, because
if only this was video, we'd have a lower third, and
right, we'd have that cryon at the bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
Industry term.
So you guys like email-based products, clearly. I'm a big email fan, I guess.
Well, we've debated whether you keep telling me that Product Hunt is a newsletter, and I said it is not.
I've not said it. It's partly a newsletter.
You want me to, whenever I talk about my favorite newsletters, you want me to include it.
Well, that's because I just want you to talk about Product
emails,
Hunt.
You send out emails that are largely summaries of what's occurring on the site, which is great. It can be consumed, but I don't think it's an email product.
Yeah. Well, it's not solely an email-based product, but there are a lot of people that consume the email. They don't really visit the site much at all.
But
yeah.
You'd like them to.
I would like them to do both. I'd like them to do either one, but both would be great.
Email's an easy on-ramp.
I mean, in many ways, I think Product Hunt and Nuzzle and the Skim are email products supported by a community.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's common across them and that we like about them. The other thing I'll say about email, which we really like, is, you know, humans are lazy. And so we don't like products that require people to change their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Everyone checks their email every single day. So exactly. In terms of building an initial relationship with a user, email is incredibly powerful. You know this. So I think a lot of people are scared of email. But our view is that people are living in email, and that's not likely to change anytime soon. So beginning a relationship there is a really powerful place to be.
The other thing is you need to remind users that you exist. Even if they visit and sign up for a product and they like it, they still need a reminder. And sometimes I feel like founders are just too scared to spam, or they feel like it's spam if they email or if they send a push notification. Yeah. At the end of the day, you, especially early on when they haven't built that habit or that kind of association with the product, they need some reminder. So without email, Product Hunt, without Twitter and without email, Product Hunt wouldn't exist, or it would be very, very, very small. It's a really core part of the product for me.
Yeah, I think kind of being in email and also just doing one thing really well.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to think of when you've got a particular problem or trying to do a particular thing, to think of that one thing you turn to.
Yeah.
It's still why people turn to Yelp for restaurant reviews, right? Because that's the thing that they're known for. And all these other companies have been trying to outdo Yelp in terms of restaurant reviews, and nobody's been able to do it because that's what Yelp is known for. That's what people turn to Yelp for. And they know that when they're thinking about what restaurant to go to, they go to Yelp. And so we kind of think about what does this thing do really well, and is it obvious? And if it is, the more obvious it is, the easier it is for people to remember.
Yeah.
But email is a super way of reinforcing that.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about other products that you find increase your efficiency, Sacha?
Other portfolio companies? Is it?
There's a lot of those.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Sacha won't let me use any of the new productivity tools like Slack, so on and so forth.
I love Slack. Slack's awesome.
We're a two-person office, team. So he's like, you sit across from me. If you want to say something, just tell me.
Yeah, but it supports GIFs, and you can do custom emojis. Yeah, we have a emoji in our Slack
room. And you can create all different
room.
Channels. You could, like, you know, the homebrew mentions could be a channel.
If we were two people and distributed, it'd be one thing. If we were more than two people, it'd be one thing. But it's kind of introducing something into our daily workflow, which I doesn't solve a problem for me.
I use it. I just use it. I have to use it by myself.
Yeah.
It's lonely.
That's not fun. Although their onboarding is great. Remember
their onboarding is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for those that don't know, they basically start
at smart.
Yeah. They start with a bot that asks you questions. They ask, what is it like? What's your first name? What's your email address? So it's not like a text input field that you normally have when you sign up for a site. But it's just you're actually using the product while entering your information.
Yeah,
it's really
cool. Great onboarding experiences like that teach you how to use the product in the context of onboarding and demonstrate the value of the product, and they do that incredibly well.
Yeah.
You know, at a personal level, you know what a big fan of Fancy Hands.
Yes,
I am.
That's right.
Virtual tasks.
That's right.
And my wife, who also loves Fancy Hands, is one of the best users of TaskRabbit I've seen. I think it's interesting. A lot of these companies, that do sort of horizontal virtual tasks, had this initial challenge of trying to communicate you know, exactly what you could use them for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to what Sacha was saying earlier about people understanding easily, simply, and off the bat, oh, this is the button I press and something happens.
Yeah.
There was this sort of challenge of, oh my God, that sounds so great. But how do you get into the decision set? How do you get top of mind for people? And I think what, you know, Leah's recently done with TaskRabbit in terms of focusing on a few categories and turning in from bidded jobs to per hour helps a lot there. Fancy Hands is a small company out of New York that uses a really interesting virtual distributed labor across the U.S. And you can kind of, you pay on a task basis. You buy like a bundle of 5, 10, or 25
tasks. It's like a monthly subscription, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they roll over if you don't use all your tasks. So it's not like there's not sort of this sort of fear of, oh my God, what happens if I don't make use of all it?
Yeah.
But you just sort of, you know, enter a text box entry or email or mobile app, and like almost right away somebody will go and take care of it for you, whether it's scheduling a doctor's appointment, or we have a 2-year-old, so like when we're traveling, the whole calling in advance to make sure that they actually have a crib for her and that they've taken all the booze out of the mini fridge so that we can put in her milk and stuff like that. You know, usually it's just, it, you know, it's 15,
how do they define a task
minutes.
Though? Because a task can be very small and it can be very big.
Yeah, you know, I put in some things that take 30 seconds and some things that probably take half an hour, and I think it probably just
even
averages out over time.
Yeah.
I imagine that if you're like a really, if you're really trying to bundle too many things in, and maybe eventually, you know, if there's a number of tasks in a row that have all taken longer than a certain period of time, maybe that account gets flagged and they sort of like look at it and
they just stop responding.
Fire their bad customers maybe, but you know, it's been great so far for me.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to talk about a product that I'm intrigued by, we're not investors in, is Refresh.
Yes.
I find that I use it every day in preparation for a meeting. It hasn't quite nailed it for me yet, and I think there's more to do in terms of helping me actually maintain relationships and follow up on meetings, but they do a really great job with their notifications, and I find that I'm using it more and more over the course of time. And I've gotten to the point where I have lots of product feature requests, and that generally that's a good sign for me when I'm using products. And so, but it's a product I'm excited about, and I know there's a category there now developing. There's a number of products in that space, but Refresh is the one that I've been playing with.
And they started off, the initial version really was just giving you information before your meeting about this person, so you can talk intelligently about maybe how long they've been at their work and where they graduated from, where they're from, other interesting tidbits. And then they're expanding to intros and notes and other things that basically facilitate that meeting process or that relationship process even better. But they started off with something like very clear and simple, like if you are going to a meeting, here's an easy way to understand something about this person.
Exactly right.
Yeah. We were just chatting right before we started recording that they need a feature, one button click, where you can understand how to pronounce someone's name, like Sacha's name. It's the first time meeting him today, and thank God I asked him how to pronounce his name before recording.
He'll respond to anything, though.
That's right.
And his Starbucks
anything?
Name is his Starbucks name is Sam.
Yep. Sam? Okay.
He just uses
that's,
Sam.
That's so much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a new product that, do you guys know about Shadow?
No.
Shadow Puppet. I know about Shadow Puppet.
Is that a product? Is that a thing? What is Shadow Puppet? Tell me about that first.
Shadow Puppet is like a storytelling creation app. But tell me about Shadow.
So this is actually not quite released, but I got an email because I signed up for their beta, and I downloaded it, and it's, you could describe it in probably a few different ways. I like to describe it as a dream-based social network, sort of. Yeah, it's kind of trippy, and their landing page and their design is very mysterious. So the entire goal, or what it is you can use it for a couple different things. But one, you can set up an alarm so that when you wake up, it gently wakes you up.
Uh-huh.
And then it prompts you to, it asks you, do you remember your dream? Did you have a dream? If you say no, it just says okay, that's fine.
Shadow, community of dreamers.
I did see this.
Yes, and if you click yes, you can start recording it either in text or with your voice, and you can start recording, you know, retelling your dream. Because how many times do you dream and you kind of remember maybe, but then you forget shortly after? And so it's a way to record dreams and then share them with other people, which is kind of fascinating. It's like this new way of interacting with people possibly.
But you share it with other people?
Yeah.
So how does it not turn into performance art, just like you know, some of these anonymous social networks and things like that tend to be, I think, more about you know, Craigslist misconnections and you know, it's creativity and prose rather than it is you know, self-discovery.
Well, that was kind of one of the observations I made when I signed up is, one, it asks for your full name. Now, you could put a fake name if you want, but they're intentionally wanting you to enter your identity, your real identity. And, you know, you can imagine this being completely anonymous or, like, pseudonym-based, and it could be a pseudonym. But, you know, I don't know. It's obviously it hasn't quite launched, and so it doesn't have a lot of people using it. So we'll see if it even catches on and how people actually adopt it. But I think it's interesting. Like, how many products have you used that are focused on dreams? Like, I can't think of a single one.
None.
New market. Yeah, it's, you know, if only it could read your mind and just share them for you.
I think there's a Kickstarter project.
I think Google's working on that.
Really?
No, they're working on Inceptions. They know what your dreams are already because they trace them.
Or to change them. Yeah. That would be awesome.
Or you're going to edit that part out, right?
Do you know something that the
public
doesn't know?
I left years ago. I'm not a trusted tester of Google's Dreamscape product.
Dreamscape. You heard it here first.
Yes. I think that's, you know, it's there's nothing that brings joy to my heart more than a, you know, test flight or hockey link. I love trying people's pre-release apps. That's fun. And, you know, I think we, in some ways, we get to see more now, obviously. But
yeah,
I also
sure.
think there's people who actually are worried about showing us things too early. Whereas, like, before, they would always just want to be like, feedback. But now they're, you know, like they're at what point does...
No, you're the investors.
Yeah, like
right.
pitching start. But, you know, part of being thematic for us, you know, and focusing on sort of what we call the bottom-up economy, which tends to be a lot of marketplaces, SaaS, direct-to-consumer stuff, means, like, we actually, even though we come from the, with Twitter and YouTube and things like that, we come from sort of a mobile, social, you know, entertainment background, we tend not to invest a lot in that space. So folks from that space, like, are willing to show us anything because they just want feedback.
Yeah.
And so it is really interesting to see what people are thinking about and creating. And I think the biggest, the exploration space there for me tends to be explored by people with different cultures or different ages. So they grew up with different concepts of what technology does and doesn't do and different norms and expectations rather than, you know, sort of the byproduct of, you know, some MBA strategy process looking for a good market.
Yeah.
And so it's so interesting to see like, oh, yeah, you know, this is either something that meets a human need that before hasn't been met through technology, or in a lot of cases is kind of a riff on an idea that doesn't really have a long roadmap behind it. And I think those riffs usually bubble up for a little while, but then pass pretty quickly because they're entertaining for a moment. But beyond that, they have no sort of depth. Sacha, you have your modes of communication framework, right?
Oh, yeah. We needed a whiteboard for that, so it's not going to work well here.
Imagine a 2x2.
Right. But I think, like, a lot of these things are, you know, enabling what is a latent behavior or enabling something that's happening in the offline world and a behavior that is well known to whoever's creating the particular application. And that's amazing to see, right? There's all kinds of new ways that people are interacting and modes of communication. And for us, it's really fun to see those products early and just give feedback, even though that's a world we tend not to invest in.
How do you, I guess, judge a product when it's, you know, it's not for you and it's for, let's say, a 13-year-old girl is like the target audience. How do you, as an investor and as like someone in Silicon Valley, a male, evaluate those type of products?
Investors have children just so they can look at their kids' home screens. That's what I hear.
Is that why you got married?
No, but that's why the team is so important, right? Yeah. I mean, we need to believe that the team has a point of view that is enabling them to see something that other people don't see. And so if somebody comes to us and is building something for 13-year-old girls, we want to hear the why behind that and their point of view that is unique. And they just got to convince us that that's the world that they live in, and they're building something that serves that world. And I don't think, you know, in many cases, we're not the customer for the things that we invest in.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is, are we betting on a team that has knowledge that we don't have, which is almost always true.
Yeah, we don't try in any of these cases to be sort of the smartest person in the room, because even if we, you know, completely believe and understand what an entrepreneur is showing us today, we want them to have a long roadmap in their head and you know, be thinking about the market and have a set of insights that forget even their investors having, that, you know, competitors aren't having yet, potential yeah. partners aren't having yet. And so a lot of it, I think, has to do with understanding how people think and assessing their ability to turn those thoughts into product, mm-hmm. Rather than necessarily having to believe we know exactly where they're heading. At the stage of investing we do, you're certainly not taking a set of numbers and then extrapolating them to see if you believe their financial assumptions.
Right.
You know, sometimes there's evidence or traction or other types of information that gives you a signal, but at the end of the day, you're still betting on, you know, a team and what they believe to be true.
Yeah, we want people to have hypotheses, right, and be open to the idea that they're wrong, but have an idea or a belief that they want to test. And as long as they're open to the notion that they could be wrong and they want to take a test and iterate approach to things, it's not hard to back those kinds of people.
Yeah. Is there, I'm putting you on the spot here, but is there a company that maybe approached you or that you passed on that you now regret passing on? Is there anyone that blew up?
I think the honest answer is we're just too young to know for sure.
I think there's, what's interesting for us is I think there's some like, industry, there's some verticals that we have hypotheses on, mm-hmm. where we've had to try to decide, like, okay, having been a fund that started in the beginning of 2013, mm-hmm. are we at the beginning, middle, or end of people inventing, for example, I mean, we've talked about this around like the food space, right? Mm-hmm. So there's been an incredible amount of funding over the last few years and continuing on all different sorts of I'm hungry, feed me type of products.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately, it's a big enough space and there's enough interesting teams that surely there's going to be some very large successful companies created there.
Mm-hmm.
However, were those companies seed funded in 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015?
Yeah.
That's the point that we've tried to sort of figure out and come to a conclusion on whether we're interested in chasing the trend. Because from a early stage investment standpoint, one of the things you definitely don't want to do is get conviction towards the end of a trend.
Right.
You're unlikely to have seen enough companies to be able to sort of be able to get a sense for who's tackling something in a new or innovative way.
Mm-hmm.
And you also sometimes at that stage get people who are reacting to the market opportunity from an entrepreneurship standpoint, as opposed to, you know, taking a, you know, what would have been a contrarian play 3 years ago and trying to convince people that now's the time to build this business.
Yeah. Are there actually any nascent trends that you're looking at in particular from an investor perspective, or are you, like an example is the Uber for X is like the Uber for X for everything. Mm-hmm. And
well, you just said, was today's Airbnb for
Airbnb for X, yes. Which, this morning I was like, what am I going to put in the email today? And somebody posted Outdoors, which is Airbnb for outdoor equipment for mm-hmm. like camping, which is cool. It's interesting. And I'm like, wait a minute, there are a lot of Airbnb for X products.
I was like, there's many of specifically Airbnb for outdoor equipment products.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I just searched Airbnb on Product Hunt and there were maybe a dozen or something.
Yeah,
and I chose some of them.
Well, Sasha just wrote a little bit about
marketplaces,
local marketplaces yesterday.
Yeah. So, I mean, we, as an example, like marketplaces have been around for a long time. There's marketplaces like Airbnb that have emerged that have become incredibly successful. But, you know, our general point of view is that that trend is early. And there's going to be many more marketplaces. And we've tried to develop a point of view around the types of things that we think are interesting. So Uber is another example. Right? There's Uber for X 100 times over. And there's lots of things going on in just transportation and logistics. And our point of view is that we don't want to invest in things that are doing point-to-point delivery of people or things.
Yeah.
Like that market is done and a race to the bottom.
Unless there's value
being created on
value
both sides.
On one or both.
Right. So, you know, when we see things like Uber for X and Airbnb for X, we try to develop a point of view around what's happening that's different that might still fit in that frame, or we try to write off a category entirely. And in the case of food, I think we've tended to write it off entirely. And in the case of local marketplaces, we're very firm that we're early in that, and there are very specific things that we look for that maybe older marketplaces
right. So for
or earlier
food, for
built
example,
marketplaces
we have a
don't
set
have.
Of hypotheses mm-hmm. that we continue to check and see, like, okay, if technology has changed or there's, you know, or we were right or wrong about something, then we believe we can be early to a second wave of, you know, food commerce, food mm-hmm. like we're still very early, I think, in food production, mm-hmm. you know, and some of the things we're seeing there, and we're seeing more and more connected kitchen type of devices, like it might be early there. Whereas, you know, getting something delivered from a restaurant to your house, you know, might be late on. Yeah. To Satya's point also about sort of the Uber for X or Airbnb X, one of the things that we think about too is the motivations of the team in that case. Mm-hmm. So if it's a team that is using, let's say, that shorthand primarily because it's the easiest way to convey to the world what they're doing, and or
because that market is hot or it's trendy,
or they've taken some lessons from that. But if it's then we're like, okay, you know, this team has still experienced the pain they're trying to solve, or we believe that they're in this for the long haul. If it's a business that wouldn't have existed if Uber or Airbnb hadn't been formed, you know, like this team would be doing something else, but all of a sudden they got together, they saw the success of Airbnb, and they're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we had Airbnb for video games?
Yeah.
Oh, I can code that up in 3 hours, you know, da 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 da. Like, for us, that's not a deep enough conviction to believe that they're going to want to spend 2, 5, 10 years of their lives like solving that problem.
Yeah.
And so we look for people who, even if they're using a shorthand in description, have been thinking about or care deeply about the product in a greater way than just the sort of, you know, Uber for X quip.
Yeah, I mean, there's the founder market fit. What was it? Chris Dixon wrote a piece about that a long time ago, and it's really, is that person the right person to tackle this problem? And I, too, think about, you know, as I was starting product, it's like, is this... Who knows if it's something I could continue doing for like 5+ years, but you know, at least right now, of course, I'm very convicted. Is that the right word? I'm very sure of myself. Convicted. Yeah. I'm very convicted. You know, I'm very bullish, of course, on where I'm going, and it's something that I couldn't imagine myself doing anything else. And I've also worked on other projects, like something I was like, okay, wouldn't it be cool if there was some sort of Uber for laundry? Like, people in San Francisco don't have washers and dryers, and it's a pain in the ass, and they have money to pay for that. Wouldn't that be neat? So I'm like, okay, let me explore this idea. And then I realized, do I really want to be the laundry dude? Like, right. I'd much rather be the product hunt guy. So I completely agree with you. What are there any crazy weird products that you've seen lately? I like the crazy weird because the crazy weird is usually crazy weird and goes away. But, you know, sometimes you see some little nugget there of,
I mean, the one that got announced recently that you probably read about is this connected cup called Vessel.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That's pretty crazy, I think.
It got beaten on a little bit.
Yeah, it did. I mean, how often do you not know what you're pouring in your cup, I guess, is the issue, right?
Although I always think this thing's like, I don't know, I think the same thing happened, like, my point around Yo wasn't that it's good or it's bad objectively. It's like, look, we're going to see a lot of experiments in these areas, and if those experiments succeed or fail is almost secondary to, can they catalyze new ways of thinking or new approaches that other people build into their products? And so, you know, from a, you know, connected cup, connected plate, connected whatever, it's like, if that first generation of product does or does not resonate, I don't, you know, unless I'm an investor in that particular company, I don't particularly care. In fact, I think it's great that people are trying things out, because the next wave of ideas, you know, generate from, you know, at least partially informed by what came.
I mean, this is just history repeating itself again, right? I mean, many of the companies that have been successful in the last few years were ideas that were tried in 1999, 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
And so I think you're going to see the same thing happen again. These things come in cycles, right? A bunch of companies are going to start in different categories now. A bunch of them will fail. A bunch of learning will happen from that. And a bunch of new companies will emerge that will have learned from that and timed the market correctly and just taken a different approach. And they'll be successful. So, you know, it's a wonderful time to be an entrepreneur or an investor, because there are so many of these categories where that initial innovation is happening.
Yeah.
And I think we're just at the beginning of kind of one of these tremendous cycles, right? For this Cambrian explosion.
Even though we haven't, from a homebrew perspective, haven't invested deeply in hardware stuff yet, the when I think of crazy, like the stuff that I see going on at Highway 1 and at Lemnos, like, I love seeing those demo days or talking to those people, not because I'm necessarily trolling for investments, although I'm always happy to figure that out too, but because I think there's just really interesting ways to sort of, you know, answer the question, well, what if this had sensors? You know, like, what data would it be doing, you know, would be collecting or receiving that starts to change how I think about the experience, the before, the after, and you know, some of that is utilitarian, some of that is expressive. Like the last Highway 1 demo day, they had everything from you know, a connected grill. It was like an algorithm for steak and stuff, you know, to
an algorithm for steak. That's a great, that's a great tagline.
Yeah. Yeah. To, you know, like a digital wearable kind of purse that had everything from notifications to, like aesthetically pleasing animations and displays and stuff. And, it's just, you know, those are areas. I have a 2-year-old daughter. And when I think about, you know, when she's 5, she's going to be asking for her allowance, you know, in Bitcoin that we use to at Shapeways, you know, to print out stuff at our 3D printer so she can go play with it. You know, like the world that we're going to be growing up in over the next, you know, 3, 5, 10 years is going to be impacted so dramatically by this convergence of hardware and software that it's just really fun to see people pushing at those extremes right
now. That's why it sucks when, you know, the decisions are made like what the FAA did with drones or what the Supreme Court did with Aereo. Because it really gets in the way of kind of this cycle of innovation, right? Yep. It's going to basically push off that innovation for an entire, you know, half decade or whatever it is. Inevitably, it will happen,
yeah.
Right? And they're just kind of arbitrarily deciding that it shouldn't happen now. And that's, you know, frustrating as somebody involved in technology because, you know, our kids are going to live in a very different world and it's going to be better in many, many ways. And decisions like that just kind of get in the way of progress that can be meaningful to people's lives.
Well, I always, yeah. I mean, I think there's obviously always going to be, people are going to be trying things and there's going to be some guidelines that need to be put out there. But with a lot of these new technologies, you know, I sort of think about it as a, you know, a yes if as opposed to a no. Like, so, you know, obviously the FAA is going to have some guidelines around, you know, where drones can go.
Yeah.
But, you know, in actuality, what they said wasn't horrible, which is sort of keep them away from airports and below 400 feet, right? Like, it's not crazy.
Yeah, yeah, it's reasonable. I'm loving the drone videos that people are putting out.
Dronies?
Yeah, the dronies. I'm in a Facebook group with a bunch of droney dudes, and I've never actually gone and droned, is that the right word, myself, but I just watch some of these videos, and they edit them, and they add music. And there's a site called travelbydrone.com, I think. Yeah. Have you seen that?
No,
it's rad. So it's a collection of these droney videos and drone flyovers across the world. And so you see a map. I think they use Google Maps. And overlaid on that map, you see different locations of where that footage was taken.
That's cool.
So you can travel to Turkey, to, you know, San Francisco, to L.A., to anywhere in the world and see these flyovers. And they're really cool. Like, I saw, watched one. It was a drone flying over Rome. It's like, where do you get to see that? So.
Yeah.
I don't know. Drones are a fascinating area, and I keep seeing products on Product Hunt related to that, whether it's travel by drone or, you know, an automated self, like, controlled drone that follows you around. I forgot the name of it. I'm still waiting for the Koopa, you know, Koopa cams from Mario?
Mm-hmm.
I want that. I want that.
Yeah.
So I'm snowboarding, it's like, it films me, and I can, you know, show off my awesome 2-foot 180s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with these video cameras in our pocket, it's only a matter of time before you can be anywhere in the world you want to be, right? Because somebody will help you be there.
Yeah. So did you check out the EDC Snapchat feed last weekend?
Can't say that I did.
Okay. So you missed out.
Stories there.
Yeah. Yeah. So their new stories, what do they call it? Our stories, I guess. Right. Is they had EDC, the Electric Daisy Carnival in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And you could just add EDC Live, I think was the username, and you would see different videos and photos taken there at the event. And, you know, I was in San Francisco here, and I was just checking them out. It was just really weird. It was this new kind of interaction where you can now see all this creation happening. You can almost feel like you're part of it a little bit.
I sent a tweet last week, which some people took as a joke, but I meant it seriously, is that I'm still waiting for an app that is a group-based temporal group-based app. Yeah. Right, so like EDC, like everybody there can automatically be collected and the experience can be shared.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've seen one of those on Product Hunt.
You know Leo?
Yeah, we know Leo.
Yeah.
We know the founders of Leo.
Yeah, I like Carlos is awesome.
Yeah.
Leo, I like Leo. My biggest complaint is that he put me in a group with some like 24 people.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get about 100 Leo messages, videos, and photos, it's so hard to go through them all.
Yeah.
And so I've churned. I'm sorry, Carlos.
Yeah. But Leo's different in that a group is created, right?
Right.
And you're part of a group where I think, like, you're automatically part of a group because you're going to the Niners football game.
Yeah.
What was it? There was an event like, I.O. this week, right? It would have been cool to see, like, all tweets, Instagrams, Facebook posts from I.O. automatically somewhere.
I think that's. I mean, I've seen I've seen better and better versions of that.
Yeah.
I guess, like, in my mind, when somebody does that well, it might be a component of another experience. But I think that's one of those sort of false products that, like, if that was your that as a pure standalone experience, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that you do that. Like, I don't know if that's a place that you go to regularly.
That's where it makes sense with our stories on Snapchat, isn't that you're already taking these photos and now you can contribute,
right?
And you can consume like, within that flow.
I do that all the time on Twitter, right? Like in terms of last night I was at a concert, I kept searching the band name because I wanted to see what other people around me were saying.
Mm-hmm.
If Twitter could just give me that integrated experience, you know, that and within Twitter, the great. If I had another app that was specifically about like trying, you know, I'd have to go and search for that, and then they'd be pulling everything together.
Unless there's another layer on top of it. So there's something called Shortwave. Have you been playing with that at all, or heard of it?
Heard of it, haven't played with it.
Shortwave. So it's within 100 meters. It's a chat room. It's anonymous or pseudonyms, and it's, you know, anyone who's within 100 meters of you, you can chat with. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting because so few people are on it. But when I get a push notification that says someone nearby you is on Shortwave, I open it up and I start looking around and I'm like, who's that other person?
Yeah.
And if there were more people and you were at a concert or something like that, I could see that being an interesting, I don't know.
There was another chat product like that that recently started to tip a little bit. Some high school student told me, I was like, he hasn't seen so much use, you know, like locally of something since Snapchat, but I forget what it was called. It was like it had been around for a while.
Popcorn messaging?
No.
Or
there was another, it had like a little something talk name. And it was, you know,
popcorn's
it was like
the one
I was. TikTok?
It was like, maybe it was like, I don't know, it's an animal as a logo or something. Yeah. But we're seeing a lot of that. What's so interesting is the number of people working on a similar project at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I always, you know that the way that it, most ideas don't have that succeed don't just have one team working on that, as many people sort of taking different approaches and one breaks through. And so it's sort of inevitably part of innovation that a lot of people are sort of working on something.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes the ideas are like, and approaches are so similar and the teams are so like equally balanced in their talent or things like that. You want to kind of get them all in a room and be like, create one super team.
Didn't you get introduced to two companies doing the same thing with the same name?
I had two. Yeah, no. There was two companies. It was actually what Leo was before.
Before it became Leo.
Before it became Leo.
Right.
And another. So a guy sent me. And so
out of context, it's going to sound really weird.
Yeah. We knew this one company that was working on a particular project with a particular name. And then this other guy here in the Bay Area, and then this other guy from Seattle emails me, and he's like, hey, we don't know each other, but I've been following you on Twitter, whatever, and I want to tell you about a project I'm working on. It's called blank doing blank. He's like, I'm working on with a few other guys. I was like, oh, totally. I know who else. Like, is the rest of your team down in San Francisco? And he's like, no, they're up here with me. Like, oh my God. Like, this is hilarious. Like, same product, same name, no known existence of one another. Of course,
hilarious.
Leo's, you know, then the team, you know, I don't know what happened to the team in Seattle. The team in San Francisco became Leo, so.
Yeah.
I guess it worked out well for everybody.
Cool. Thanks for coming on, guys. Is there anything you want to mention, or if anyone wants to pitch you or tell you about cool new baby products maybe, or marketplaces?
Our emails are on the website, and everybody should be checking out Product Hunt.
At Hunter Walk, at Satya P.
Nice.
www.venturegeneratedcontent.com, where Satya publishes.
Hunterwalk.com.
Oh. Where does Ryan blog?
Product Hunt.
That's close enough. All right, thanks for coming on, guys.
All right,
thanks.
See ya.
See ya.